We knew the economy was going to turn at some point, but you never really can be prepared for timing or speed of change.
I hope this cycle we're in doesn't take us back to the days of regulatory purgatory. Everything we did had consequences.
As the world continues to change, we have found out we need to be even more nimble as we move forward.
By requiring things like business continuity planning and pandemic plans, we need to think proactively about what we need to do in the future.
We better grab our helmets and start getting prepared today.
Banking is a risk business, but in today's environment, we are being faced with uncertain times. Financial institutions have always had partners who could help evaluate, address, and mitigate risk. But today, they need to lean on those partners more than ever. Welcome to Bank on Whitfleet. Each episode will feature discussions around industry issues, hot topics, and current trends, giving you an insider's look at how top performers and professionals are staying ahead of the curve. All right, let's get into today's conversation.
Welcome, everyone. Today's guest is Ben Soppit, CEO of Unified Money Incorporated. Ben is with us today to talk about investment and money management applications. We're excited to talk with Ben about some of the trends in how investor preferences and demographics are changing, especially as community financial institutions look to attract next-gen customers to their lineup of wealth services. We know from our podcast listeners that contact us that attracting millennials and Gen Z clients is top of mind for bank wealth management teams. Ben, your background and firm can provide some insights to our podcast listeners on what is happening. Ben, thank you for being here today. Perhaps you wouldn't mind providing our listeners some information about you, your background, and your firm.
Absolutely. And thank you very much, Robert, for the kind introduction and the invitation to speak with you today. So yes, my name's Ben Soppit. I am the co-founder and CEO of Unify Money. My background is in financial services and fintech. I worked at Visa, leading their innovation practice in Southeast Asia, Australia, New Zealand, and then moved with Visa to San Francisco. I was part of the commercialization of Fitbit Pay and also worked at Samsung Pay before deciding that Unify Money and the vision that we have of simplifying and driving and catalyzing more people to engage actively in their wealth management journey in combination with their banking was the vision I wanted to really focus on and spend my time on.
Great. Well, thank you for providing our listeners with your background, Ben. Everyone will recognize your wonderful accent, which is just a pleasure also. Why don't we start with you telling us about Unify Money, who it's designed to attract, and how you're working with your selected segment of community financial institutions.
Absolutely. So Unify Money is a multi-asset digital wealth management platform for community financial institutions. Today, we support passive and active investing in over 10,000 stocks and ETFs. We support over 80 cryptocurrencies, buy, hold, sell, and precious metals, fractional investing in precious metals. These are fully allocated metals, not digital gold. Customer owns the underlying asset, can have it delivered to their home or stored securely in an insured vault. Our vision is ultimately to be the Amazon of digital wealth management. Anything and everything you can invest in through a mobile app or a web browser, as long as it's compliant, as long as the tech is accessible and the commercials work for everybody, we want to bring that functionality to community financial institutions and through them to their end consumers.
So just like Amazon for our listeners, Ben, if I understand correctly, the community financial institution's customer can purchase a wide range of non-bank products through your platform, just like they could if they went to Amazon.
Correct. So another way to think of it is we have all of the functionality of Wealthfront, Robinhood, Coinbase, plus a precious metal investing app in one interface, and that's accessible through your existing digital banking infrastructure.
Fantastic. And I know you have worked with different banking associations and core providers that have looked at your solution. So you certainly understand the banking space very well. Perhaps you wouldn't mind, Ben, sharing with our podcast listeners what they need to know about next-gen customers, how those next gen customers see money management. You know, how does something like, for instance, gamification impact the industry?
Yeah, I mean, there has been an incredible change in mass culture around investing. When I was growing up and when I started to invest, Gordon Gekko was the sort of reference point. You know, someone high up in a big skyscraper in New York or London, doing things that are very complicated, no one understood, and making and losing huge amounts of money. It was a black box. It wasn't accessible. Today, your average Gen Z will reference Reddit, they'll reference Elon Musk, they'll reference meme stocks. Accessibility has never been higher. We've seen great innovations like commission-free trading. Obviously, mobile phone access has provided almost everybody the ability to access not just conventional investment platforms, but very unconventional ones as well. So you can now invest in fractional farmland and fractional wine and fractional art, NFTs, collectibles, sports memorabilia. There's never been greater access to more investment options than ever before. And consumers have responded to that in the most extraordinary way. We've seen the proportion of total traded volume go from 10%, where it was for the last 50 years or so, to over 30% driven through retail investing. So this is a very, very real mass market cultural phenomenon. And it's not exclusively you know, new generations, you know, people in their 20s and 30s. We're seeing, we talked to one bank and they did some research. They're working with one of the very established, you can imagine who it is, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to use the brand name, but very established traditional wealth management company. And they found, you know, these companies do a great service for people who want that traditional in-person advisory service. But they're typically older and richer individuals. And they found that over half of those customers also have a Coinbase and or Robinhood account and are direct trading as well, because it's fun, because it's interesting. So we've seen investing go from in mass market popular culture, something other people did and no one understood, to something everybody does. And it's almost investing in it as entertainment. And that is a great thing in many ways, but it also comes with many dangers. And from our perspective, we characterize ourselves not as a crypto platform, definitely not as a Bitcoin platform. We characterize ourselves as a digital wealth management platform. We enable people to self-direct through their existing digital channels. But importantly, you know, we fully subscribe to the get rich slowly philosophy, not the get rich quick. And the get rich slowly philosophy is about saving as much as you can every month. Doesn't matter if it's $5 or $5,000, dollar cost averaging that into a low cost, highly diversified fund. And that's the absolute foundation of our product pyramid. Yes, we have access to cryptocurrencies. You know, we are the most comprehensive investment platform that I'm aware of in the market. But it's fundamentally about using the energy and excitement of alternative assets to try and catalyze more people to directly engage, actively engage in their long-term wealth management journey. And we have the technologies to make that very, very easy so that you can passively invest over 10, 20, 30 years. You can do so in a low cost, low risk, or risk appropriate, diversified way. You may not, if you do that for 30 years, you may not retire rich, but you have a very low probability of retiring poor. So it's a very different approach to some providers in the market who are looking at crypto in a very focused way, and only crypto or only Bitcoin. We see alternative assets, of which crypto is just one example, as an important part of a balanced, systematic wealth management journey, and we provide all the technologies and all the optionality to have a very responsible approach to wealth, long-term approach to wealth management, but also access to the new and exciting things as well.
Well, I think you bring up some excellent points to unpack there. First is that we tend to get caught up in certain generations, but really we're talking about this across different generational aspects, that people want to participate in investing using their phone or using multiple ways of doing it. And perhaps what we thought of just one direct person-to-person wealth management strategy may not be something that is for everyone. And we need to have solutions in our financial institutions that meet that need. Did I hear you correctly on that, Ben?
Yes, absolutely. And it costs, it cuts across generations, it cuts across socioeconomic groups. Investing has never been more important in an environment in which we have high inflation, low interest rates. Investing is relevant for everybody, regardless, everybody in the mass affluent segment. High net worth individuals have their own problems, bless them. People below the poverty line have their problems. But for the mass affluent group, the 60 to 70% of people who do have disposable income that they probably should be investing, but almost certainly don't, that's the group that we're trying to solve for, regardless of their particular interest in and biases towards different asset classes. Everybody wants to have a safe, secure retirement, and that's what we're trying to optimize for.
Excellent. You did touch a little bit on cryptocurrencies. Of course, it is a buzzword. We've seen everything happening with the Bitcoin's recent crash. I know you and your team have spent a lot of time thinking about cryptocurrency as a piece of the platform, as something that people are interested in across all the generations. Ben, can you provide us some insights into how cryptocurrencies are changing investment platforms and the impact of Bitcoin's recent crash?
Definitely, yeah. We are big believers in the future of blockchain technology, of which cryptocurrencies are one example. So we are definitely bullish on the long-term growth and innovation and value that the blockchain technologies in general will provide. But investing, and it doesn't matter if you're in the 17th century investing in tulips or if you're in the 21st century investing in cryptocurrencies, alternative assets are inherently risky. There's a famous book called, what's the title? It's called This Time Is Different, 8 Centuries of Financial Folly. It's a book by Carmen Reinhart and Kenneth Rogoff. And they take apart this notion that every generation has their own sort of new asset class that everyone swears is different and flies against the physics of economics and investing. And in every single occasion, that is not proven to be true. So risky assets are risky assets. And cryptocurrency is one of those risky assets. Does it have a role in a properly diversified, risk-adjusted, long-term wealth management strategy? Absolutely. We believe in the 90-10 rule, that 90% of your investing should be very systematic, very boring, frankly, very diversified and low cost. And your 5 to 10% is your fund money, money that you can afford to lose potentially, money that you can use to invest in riskier assets and invest in things that you're interested in. So we see it as a integral part of a fully diversified, risk appropriate portfolio, but only a part and a small part. It's not the tail wagging the dog. And that's why, yes, we support cryptocurrencies. Ultimately, we will support all forms of alternative asset, particularly Reg A, Reg A plus asset classes. So these are things like the collectibles that I mentioned, the sports memorabilia, the fractional wine, etc. The power of these things is that these alternative assets is that they're inherently interesting. You can invest in a Triceratops skull for $10 on Rally Road. The one I always use with bankers is that you can now invest in Tiger Woods practice putter for $10. And in a room of bankers, they always laugh at that because they're in, there's a high probability they're into golf. And they never thought and it's like, wow, I can own a small part of Tiger Woods' practice putter. That's inherently interesting. Trying to sell investment, trying to sell dollar cost averaging and passive investing and robo investing to a 25-year-old, it's not dissimilar to selling a pension to a 25-year-old. They think they're going to live forever. They don't see the point. It's 30 years in the future. It's not very interesting. How do we make it interesting? How do we generate that engagement? We use things that they are interested in, whether that's fractional investing in sneakers, in cryptocurrencies, in Tesla, it doesn't matter. But importantly, again, it should be embedded within the ability to adopt a long-term wealth management journey, of which alternative assets play an important but only a small part of the whole.
I think you're right on the money, Ben. We certainly talk with our clients about really thinking of the investment experience or the banking experience. And certainly in today's age, people want options. They want to be part of the process. They don't want, as you mentioned earlier, someone coming down from the mountain and telling them how to do it. And these are just profound shifts in thinking of how we develop a unified omni-channel experience for Absolutely. All sorts of people to participate.
And by the way, this isn't in our view, this doesn't take away from the need for and the value of direct traditional financial advisory services. You know, there are times in your life when you need that. You need independent, personalized advice.
Absolutely.
Life events. You know, you get married, have a baby, buy a house, get divorced. There are times when you need, when your life gets more complicated and you need those services. We do not provide personal advice. So we don't really cross over into that traditional world. And we are talking to a large number of financial institutions who already offer traditional wealth management services to their higher income customers, but they want to actually serve all of their customers and have something for, you know, a far more holistic offering. So that if you want to invest in crypto, we have that. If you want advice on your tax status, we have an advisory service. You can do that. And again, it's about empowering consumers to do what they want, but to provide them with all optionality and most importantly, the option to dollar cost average into a highly diversified fund, but to do so in a way that is engaging for them.
Sure. It's in addition to versus instead of, because you're right. There are points in your life. There are people that want someone to help them in the investment experience, and others are not at that place, or they want a different type of investment regime, so to speak.
Definitely.
I think this brings us to the next question. For those podcast listeners who are leaders at their community financial institution, and they're thinking about their approach, they're thinking about partnerships, what should they know about planning in choosing a partner in this space? What are the planning considerations? How should they think about time to market, integrating it with their current offerings? Love some ideas on that from you, Ben.
Definitely. So when you ask community financial institutions, executives, doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, that phrase, but when you ask executives their opinion on crypto or wealth management in general and the relevance of their business, you get vastly differing opinions. You have very progressive companies that are looking for a solution, and they feel a very keen need to innovate and be at the cutting edge. The majority, I would say, are not of that view. The majority are more conservative, and there are some who are diametrically opposed to any diversification from their core business. And that's all fine. However, when you talk about the deposits that every financial institution is seeing leaving their institution every single month, specifically going to third-party investment apps, whether it's Coinbase or Robinhood or someone like that, everybody is 100% engaged, because they understand deposits, they understand their core business, and they understand that if they want to go from 500 million to 700 million or 3 billion to 3.5 billion in the next 3 years, and as much money is leaving their business as is coming in new, that is a challenge for them. So we really help address the problem that, whether or not bank executives recognize the value of or the interest in of consumers with investing, investors are voting with their money, and they're taking that money and they're putting it in places because community banks and credit unions don't offer those services. With Unify Money, when a customer liquidates any holding, that money goes back to the financial institution, versus that when you send those deposits to Robinhood or Coinbase, those guys are rolling out banking services because they want to keep those deposits on their P&L, not on theirs. So we tend to talk about not trying to sell crypto or sell digital wealth management, but talk about it from the perspective of the financial institutions business, which is they're hemorrhaging deposits. Why is that? And what might the solution be? The other thing that everyone agrees with is that mega banks been around for decades, fintech's been around for one decade. How on earth can a financial institution who doesn't have the resources of Chase or a Capital One, how can they compete with a Robinhood or a Coinbase or a Revolut or a Cash App? They've got all the money, they're tech first, they've modern processes, they're agile. But the irony is that the way that the community bank and credit union market is structured, it actually allows those companies to roll out better solutions cheaper and faster than any fintech. So if you look at what we have today on our platform, we have robo-investing, we have commission-free trading, we have cryptocurrencies, and we have precious metals. It's already the most comprehensive platform in the market. For a Revolut or a Cash App or a Robinhood or a Coinbase to roll out a similar solution is likely going to take them a couple of years, in excess of $10 million, and it's a huge lift. We can go live with any institution that is on one of the platforms that we're pre-integrated with. So we're currently pre-integrated with Banno from Jack Henry and Q2. It takes less than 3 days to go live with a solution that is more comprehensive than any other fintech in the market. And that's the competitive advantage of being a community bank or credit union, in that you may not have your own technical capabilities and you may have restrictions on your technical resources, but because you're working with an aggregator platform like Banno or Q2, it actually means you can deploy these solutions, better solutions than any fintech in the market, at a fraction of the cost and at a fraction of the time it would take them, and with no technical integration required. So that is really one of the core competitive advantages. We very rarely talk about the advantages of being a small community financial institution, but there are there. And this is a really, really great example about how open banking and the digital banking platforms like Jack Henry and Q2 are actually enabling their clients to be more competitive than the best companies, the most progressive companies, fintech companies in the market.
I think you bring up some good points. Certainly, thinking about any partner you choose, does the cash go back to your institution or is it not in that cycle?
Yeah.
Thinking about the integration, time to market, and really thinking about all the things you said earlier, Ben, of what is our strategy? What are we trying to do to close the loop where we might have an open loop? Well, it's been an absolute pleasure today, Ben. Thank you for sharing your background, giving us a deeper dive into the market you're immersed in. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, I think... We've talked to over 100 financial institutions, both credit unions and banks, in the last 6 months or so. And we had the privilege of participating in the ICBA ThinkTech Accelerator program, which was amazingly valuable for us. And we learned a huge amount. And in every conversation, regardless of how the conversation starts, but there's a huge amount of energy in crypto, as you mentioned. When executives understand the breadth of the solution that we provide and our focus on long-term wealth management journeys, as opposed to the get-rich-quick, invest in Bitcoin type of solution, we get a huge amount of interest. But every conversation ends with risk and compliance, as it should. We are working to ensure that we are aligned with the concept of responsible innovation. And we are working and investing a huge amount with, in particular, third-party compliance advisory companies, INREG, FS Vector, Hummingbird, you guys. We are working to ensure that we provide a framework for innovation, and we don't use compliance and risks as an excuse not to innovate, but rather use it as a foundation on which to innovate. So you'll find on our website, we have a client resource center where we've created what we feel is a very comprehensive compliance playbook. It could literally be given to your examiner to explain what we're doing and how we're doing it. We've even completed a risk self-assessment so that any company wishing to work with us, they can take that as a foundation and work from it. Hopefully we've answered most, if not all, of the questions that their compliance and risk people and legal people will have. And we're really trying to ensure that every institution, regardless of size, regardless of resources and capacity, is able to, with great confidence, work with us and deploy these solutions quickly, compliantly, and safely, both for them and their consumers. So I think there's not enough, ironically, there's not enough discussion around compliance, but it tends, the discussion that does happen tends to be predicated on no action rather than action. And I think that's damaging for the industry and damaging for individual companies. And I do believe that there is a way to deliver innovation quickly and compliantly for all institutions, regardless of their size. And I hope that we're modeling best practice in that regard. We'll continue to invest and iterate on our approach, but the natural inclination to look at risk and compliance, quite rightly, we bring that to the front of every discussion. I try and ensure that we are the ones who mention compliance. We don't wait until our clients ask about it.
I think that's a great final point, that as we look at fintech as an integral part of our being in banking, in community financial institutions, we can have both time to market and compliance if we're thinking of it in that way. Well, again, Ben, what an absolute pleasure to have you today.
Thanks, Robert. Really enjoyed chatting to you.
And to our listeners, thank you as always for allowing us to share some ideas with you. And to our listeners, thank you as always for allowing us to share some ideas with you. In today's podcast, we talked about how changes and how people are approaching investing across generations is affecting our wealth management services. We need to be cognizant on providing our customers options to participate in investing when and where they want to. We explored and talked about the impact of things such as gamification and Amazon on our wealth management services and how we deliver them and who we attract to those services. And finally, we really talked and invite you to think about how financial institutions see their investment experience, and that it needs to be perhaps broader than the traditional one-on-one investment advisory services we've offered in the past. Reach out with any questions. We look forward to the dialogue, and we look forward to having you listen to us on our next podcast.
You've been listening to Bank On Witfully. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and tune into the next episode as we feature insights from other leaders in the financial industry and even more ways you can stay ahead of the curve.